Okay, can we have the roll call, please?
Burt?
Present.
Hapler?
Here.
Ormsby?
Here.
Peters?
Here.
Rafferty?
Here.
Stoltenberg?
Here.
Wendland?
Here. Okay, we had minutes from the last meeting.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move for approval of the minutes from the March 20th meeting as submitted.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to approve the minutes of March 20th, 2019. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The minutes are approved. Okay, good evening and welcome everyone to the Plan and Zone Commission for April 17th. Hopefully you've made peace with the tax man by now, and it's over 70 degrees for a change, so spring is here and we're excited about it. So we are a recommending body appointed by the City Council and the Mayor to review matters of site plans, zoning, and such. And I see a few of you in the audience. It's like church, you're all in the back. We have discount seats up front, but everybody wants the back. So if you have something in a particular case you'd like to input, we'd love to hear it at the podium at my right and your left back there at the appropriate time. I will ask the audience for input on a particular case. And with that, Greg, we will begin.
Mr. Chairman, the first case that we have involves Wyndham West Second. We've already had the platting of this portion of the Wyndham West preliminary plat. Gain access coming up Mirfield Drive off of Middle Road, and then Paddington Circle will be the means of entry into what is proposed as the second addition. We essentially have lots 58 through 80 and 101 through 105 being shown as the area that is going to become the second addition of Wyndham West. Again, Mirfield comes back out here to Middle Road, and then you Paddington Circle, and then North Paddington Circle, as that's been renamed. Eventually there will be connections so that there will be means of getting over to Mirfield with Isleworth Avenue. This is the outline here. What we're looking at are 26 lots. Again, Paddington Circle going to North Paddington Circle, Isleworth, and then connecting. There's a turnaround area right here. You do have a storage area for stormwater detention, and then certain easements connecting into that regional detention basin. Staff, in reviewing this proposal, would make a recommendation for approval. I would ask, are there any questions?
Okay, great. Thanks, Greg. Any additions since publication from staff?
Nothing from us.
Okay. Questions from the commission? You guys are all quiet. Okay, I have a few. One, the easement it's noted for what I guess will be the hammerhead at the end of Isleworth, Greg, is that a permanent easement that will be recorded against that property?
I think that it's there until such time as this property may be developed adjoining. So it wouldn't be permanent. It would be there until that area becomes sold to a developer. And once you get circulation enough sufficient on this side, then this, I imagine, would go away.
It's for a temporary hammerhead until it develops to the west.
But it'll last, if it's 10 years, it'll last 10 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
It has been recorded on the final plat. It does have the document number on
okay,
it.
Great, okay, great, great. Oh, I see that in the little print now. Sorry. Yep, document number. Thanks. Okay. One other question. There's an outlot B as in boy, and I'm wondering what's the purpose of outlot B, because it's owned and maintained by the Homeowners Association, and the other easements and things in the first edition appeared to be all easements to the adjacent lots.
I mean, you're talking, oh, no.
Just a between 19 and 19 18.
And
18. There's
oh,
outlot
this
here, B.
That's to keep that free and clear as a means of, I believe it's an access to the detention, regional detention, and I believe it also is serving as a sewer easement, but we want to make sure nothing by the owners of these two lots is ever planted in here, because that's a separate lot. It's not just an easement area, it's actually something that neither of these two lots adjoining can own.
Yeah, Yeah, that is a storm overflow as well. If I remember correctly, I believe there's an intake low point in the cul-de-sac there. So that is designated as both sanitary storm and drainage easement. So
that could take surface water through there then too?
Yes. So if a storm intake that's located basically where that B is on the final plat, there's an intake there. If that overflows, we always have to have a overland flow path down to the pond.
Okay.
A lot of times it ends up within an easement on individual yards. I would actually prefer an outlot if a developer is willing to take that on and maintain it. Because you always get, if it's in somebody's yard, you're inevitably going to end up with some type of an obstruction there that people
right.
don't realize the easement exists.
We have easements all over the town that have had something put on them, whether it's fences or utility sheds or things like that. With an outlot, it much more assures that it stays clear of any structures.
Well, and on that logic, then I had looked at some of the other, at least I know one of the other plats we have tonight has a specific reference in the notes that nothing shall be planted, no trees, shrubs, or anything like that, and I don't see that on this plat, so it's not saying it's
that's
not prohibiting
that.
Usually
a site that. Plan note that we put on for
yep.
Because that's part of the required landscaping requirement, and we don't want the landscaping placed into the required easements. We don't want the easement filled with trees.
Right, and on one of the other plats, there's a specific prohibition to trees and bushes, and I don't see that on this one.
The dedication of owner, when
it's
that is part
that.
Of the plat document,
yep.
that will override and protect the easement areas on here.
Okay.
We could still have them add that note.
Yeah, I think it's good for clarity.
Addition.
Then mm-hmm. you don't end up with what you're talking
yep.
about.
Right.
People aren't noticed. It shows up in their title. You can't put trees and bushes, and
definitely.
Great. Okay. Okay, that's the only questions I had. Anyone else from the commission? Anyone else in the audience with regard to this matter? Nope. Okay, back to the commission.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve case number 19-013, subject to staff recommendations.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to approve case 19-013, subject to the staff's recommendations. And the modification to have that added to the note. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. 19-013 is approved. Right?
Our next final plat, basically of Criswell right here, Forest Grove Drive, middle, Forest Grove, and the extension through or along adjoining Spencer Hollow First Edition is the means of connecting to what is the site of Spencer Hollow Third. This is the preliminary plat that you had reviewed earlier, and lots 1 through 16 and 47 through 52 of the preliminary plat are outlined with the black boundary. You have LV Lane coming up out of Spencer Hollow First Edition, and then you have St. Marie Court. You've got certain outlot areas that are, some of which might be used for detention, but really do not have a viable, buildable purpose that have been excluded from this particular plat. There are 22 lots in total for the final platted area. And again, the means of entry, you have two different areas to connect into the, I should say two different streets connecting into the subdivision. We wanted to again show that there was a means through Spring Creek Drive to come up through here and show again the Forest Grove Drive area, because on the preliminary you couldn't really see it. You couldn't see it on the final plat, but we just want to make sure that people understand that means of access and how that's connecting to that for the people at home as well, for the few who watch this program. But we just wanted to make sure, because this is a rather extensive subdivision, and typically on the preliminary plat you see the stages of everything. In this instance, that was not the case the way this is preliminarily platted. Staff, in reviewing the proposal, would recommend approval with the conditions listed in the report. I would ask you, are there any questions?
Okay, thanks, Greg. John, anything from staff since publication?
Not since publication, but I will point out the sanitary sewer for this project does involve the construction of a lift station. Between lots 8 and 9, there's an easement there. There is no way to gravity sewer this, which is the reason why the lift station is being constructed. The developer did work with us on the placement of this lift station, which will allow us in the future to abandon it when we do get gravity sewer. So the long-term plans for this area involve a very large Spencer Creek lift station. It's a $10 to $15 million sewer project that we're going to have to undertake at some point immediately west of where that lift station is. That'll allow us to sewer the majority of the ground north of 80. But until that development drives that, there's no need to put that in at this time. We have to cross under I-80, very extensive project. So the developer worked with us to locate this here, so when we get to that point of that lift station and being in place, we can remove this and gravity sewer down to the lift station to serve this addition.
So will the city manage and maintain this yes. lift station then?
Yep.
Okay.
So Brent, on the final plat, there's a note at that place that says City of Bettendorf parcel. But then
correct.
In the upper right-hand corner, the northeast corner, there's another City of Bettendorf parcel.
So we do own that ground. That's all part of the Forest Grove Park.
That's part
property.
Of the park. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you.
So there's a section of that that comes over the north side of this
wraps around.
Development.
Yeah.
Fingers down. Okay.
Yeah, I think
that.
That dated back to the original Forest Grove property purchase.
Mm-hmm. So all of these indications on here that show City of Bettendorf, that's all related to the park except
yep.
for the one.
Yeah, that's
okay.
all part of our contiguous
right.
parcel there.
Thank you.
Others from the commission? Nope. Anyone in the audience with regard to this matter? Nope. We'll come back to the commission.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move we approve case 19-028, Spencer Hollow, third edition as submitted, subject to staff recommendations.
Second.
Great. Thank you. We have a motion and a second to approve case 19-028, Spencer Hollow, third edition, final plat subject to staff recommendations. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Thank you. 19-028 is approved. Greg?
Mr. Chairman, the next project is two, actually. It's a site plan because it involves multifamily housing in the form of townhouses, and also it is a final plat. And what you have essentially for the Cottage Grove second is this area right here. You have a floodway that goes through right here, and then you have the 100-year floodplain that finds its way up through this area as part of this development. This is the preliminary plat that you've already approved. Originally it had been a different lot configuration, and it went from 24 lots up to 46 due to a redesign. And what you'll note here is that we have 46 lots, and then we have one lot dedicated for stormwater detention, another to demarcate more of a floodway, and then these to demarcate where that 100-year floodplain is for the 46 lots. What you have are essentially 10 fourplexes and two threeplexes throughout the site plan area. And this is the portion of the site plan showing that outlot for detention, and then again for what would be constituting that floodway. Means of entry through here, and as discussed earlier, areas considered like easement areas for the stacking by the contractor for the site as part of the development agreement that each of these owners will be have, I guess, a contractor come out and take what snow we plow in the streets and then store it in these areas here. This is the landscape plan, and what the developer's done here is he's made the calipers on these trees larger. And by making them larger, he doesn't have to plant as many of them. I believe they're 4-inch calipers, so that constitutes a doubling up of each of these trees. They're actually double in value of what they normally would be for something like this. And this is a typical four-unit build-out right here of what you'll see the developer putting together for most of these units. And then, of course, the three-unit would be smaller in scope. Staff in reviewing this proposal would recommend approval. Given the conditions in the report, I would ask, are there any questions?
Thanks, Greg. Any staff updates since publication?
The final plat's basically a mirror image of what you approved for the preliminary and what the council approved. The site plan shows you the redesigned buildings that they showed you as the concept to gain more parking on the street and to gain more snow storage. So they did exactly what they showed you concept-wise and preliminary platting-wise. Anything, Great. Brett?
No. Okay.
Nothing else from staff.
Thanks, Jen. Questions from the commission? Janessa?
It looks to me like the placement of the trees and the snow pile are in the same area on that lower kind of curve. Are the trees being there going to impede the snow plowing at all?
It won't from our perspective, because we're still just going to push it curb to curb. So it's just going to be the individual homeowners, and I don't see a tree being that big a deal.
Okay.
Others on the commission? Question regarding street parking, then. Will street parking, and can you go to the one that's titled, I think it's the one before that, Greg. Back where you were. There. Yep, thanks. So can you show, will parking be allowed on the inside of the entire loop except where there's, or let's say, no, where will parking be allowed?
I believe the parking, as long as it wouldn't be blocking any of the drives, would be probably allowed in the outer area, because during the winter, you have the potential here and here. You're going to have
– Yeah, and it's – Greg, it's not just the snow storage. It's because we have a tighter centerline radius of the street there. This piece of property is only so wide, and to be able to get this the correct width, it'd be the exact same thing that we're doing at the Woodlands. The Village of the Woodlands, where there's only parking on the outer ring. There won't be parking on the inside of the ring.
Okay, so I'm going to give you something to put up there, Greg. No criticism on my coloring today, okay? We can put that on the... Try to stay in the lines. There we go. So what I colored in, and I just want to get a feel for this, is where the driveways are and the aprons going out to the street. And one question for the developer would be, on the biggest gaps between the buildings, is that enough space to park a car? Like, so between lots 4 and 5, is that enough width for a car? I don't think there is between 2 and 3 and 6 and 7. So I'm thinking there might be places to park 1, 2, 3, maybe 4 cars on the street, on the outside of the street, on the outside edge.
As I recall, the smaller ones, on average, like in between 2 and 3, they averaged about 19 feet in width, so there would be room to park one car there. And the larger, I believe it was 37?
We talked about that.
On those larger ones? Somewhere in that area.
I was looking at some of the 30-foot lots, and I did a 16-foot driveway. I didn't have a lot of space in between, but I just want to get a visual of where people will, in the real world, park.
Can they park across the street?
No.
They can't park on the inside of the circle. That's part of the challenge.
Oh. Well, from a site plan standpoint, they have the parking that they need off-site. So any and all parking on the street is in excess of what they already have met by the ordinance requirement. And is any of that incorrect, Greg?
No, I mean, the parking level has already been met with the two vehicles required parking spaces.
In the
you
garage.
You look at the garage, and then you bring that out as well to each of these driveways. And that's essentially all that's required.
Okay, it meets it. I'm just, it's one of those
but
things.
But there will be more on-street parking here. That's why they redesigned those driveway configurations.
Okay.
So there's room for one car in the short spans and two cars in the wider spans.
So I found the exhibit that they sent us.
Good.
Displaying it. Let's see here. So yes, the smaller ones, so between
two and three,
is 19 feet wide.
Good.
So you can get one car.
Yep.
Between the double sets of buildings, so between four and five, is 34 feet. So depending upon the vehicle, you could potentially get two cars there. You'd most likely be overhanging the driveway just a hair.
Yeah. All right, that's good. So if the little ones can make it, good, great. All right.
And what that is that. Sorry, John. I didn't want to say that was compared to the original layout where, obviously, before all the snow storage discussions we had, where the smaller ones were only 12 feet wide, and the biggest one was 27 feet wide.
No, big
so
improvement.
You were getting one vehicle for every four buildings or four units.
Good deal. Okay.
Even without on-street parking, though, they will meet the regulations.
And that's good, John. That's you met the technical spirit of the law, and that's what they need to do. And then they have friends, and they have a Super Bowl party, and nobody has anywhere to park. So I'm a guy that, you know, I park way out there because I hate dings in my car. But easy is better, and if there's somewhere for them to go and if there's space in between, then you throw snow piles in, and after a year like this year when you got it piled up on sides of the driveway, and just I'm glad there's some street parking. So good. That's all I had. Anyone else in the commission?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I guess I'm probably the only one, but I look at these buildings. There are four units, and we have typically 15 feet between buildings, and in one instance, maybe 10 feet. Does anybody can think that that's too tight? I myself think that that's too tight. I'm concerned about, like I mentioned last time, if one of these things catches on fire, is there any way for somebody to try to get between that and another building to get the other side to fight it? Should we, and this is maybe not the right place to broach this, but should we be thinking about in situations like this, where you have such a large building, that maybe we put non-combustible material on those walls that are adjacent to buildings?
Yeah, the construction of the walls is based on the distance between buildings and established by the various codes, whatever this is built under. Is it townhouse or?
Yes, your townhouses.
Townhouses, so it'd be under the residential code. And I don't review the residential code, so I don't know the specific answer. But
okay.
Obviously, it's a concern to us when buildings are close together.
Well, then I'll assume that you guys have looked at that and you're okay with this.
Well, and then the construction plans come in, and that's when the construction plan review is done, and the fire rating is one of the main things that you're looking at.
Right.
All right.
Yeah, so initially we're going to review the setbacks and make sure they're complying with that, which this does, and then the secondary is if they hadn't been planning for the proper wall construction, then they'd have to adjust their plans accordingly based on what they submitted.
It's happened from time to time where once we got the construction plans, they found out, well, now you're going to have to add double sheet of plywood, sheetrock on the outside to give it the fire rating.
Yeah. All right. Thanks.
I think it's happened a couple times where they had to get rid of openings too, like windows. Not very often.
Thanks.
Thanks. Anyone else? Anyone in the audience with regard to this matter? I'm really wondering what you're all here for, but that's good. So, all right, back to the commission.
Well, we have two cases.
Items. Yep.
All right, so Mr. Chairman, I'll move for approval of case 19-021, the final plat, subject to staff recommendations.
Second.
Okay, thank you. We have a motion and a second to approve case 19-021, the final plat for Cottage Grove Second Edition. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. 1921 is approved. Okay.
And I will also move for approval of case 19030, the site development plan, subject to staff recommendations.
Second.
We're on a roll. Okay, good. We have a motion and a second to approve case 19030, Cottage Grove Second Edition Site Development Plan. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. 19030 is approved. Okay, thanks. Greg?
Mr. Chairman, this is a site development plan for Manats, and they basically it's a concrete manufacturing operation. These are the buildings here in coral color that have been removed already, and they're looking to replace a building or put a building here to substitute for their operation. I noticed while I was preparing this report that the boundary that I had on the plat was not conforming to the site boundary, so that the area in red outlined here with this being north is essentially what you're looking at in terms of the site. And the site actually that we're talking about on this particular plat, or I should say site plan, is actually more concerning this area. The area of the new structure will be right here, and the elongated building right here is what is shown adjoining. The means of entry right through here, as well as here. And our city engineer, Mr. Morlock, will talk about the areas outlined here with the proposed sewer and the removal of it. Essentially, what you're looking at, and this is the landscape plan that we had prior approved with certain types of masonry fence. This is the structure that's being proposed for construction on that site. And we felt already that given the landscaping that is here, that it sufficiently met the requirements, given that you have many other areas adjoining that are of the same zoning classification. I'll let our city engineer speak to the existing site plan with the various connections here, as that was something that's a little more involved.
Yes, we have a unique situation here. The yellow shaded line to the top of the screen is the existing storm sewer. It's a 4x3 box, so it's a pretty good size pipe. It carries quite a bit of water from State Street, but neither the developer's engineer nor our staff has been able to find a recorded easement for that pipe. It probably predates, it would have been with the initial State Street construction, and potentially predates any development that was down here. In some of their exploratory and I think some of their demo work, they've determined or uncovered really that the pipe is in pretty bad shape. It's going to need to be replaced. Part of it needs to be relocated as part of their project to begin with. We need to have a new easement dedicated. In general, not only Manat's site, but utility equipment that's adjacent to them, Tri-City Blacktop to their south. We've got kind of a larger drainage issue down there. So we're working together. We're going to set up a meeting here, I believe, next week or the week after, and look at if there's a way we can improve the drainage of the entire area down there. Not just that storm sewer, but like I said, utilities got a pond that doesn't function very well, and given the industrial nature of the property and how flat it is, we're gonna see if we can all work together to improve the whole corridor through there.
Is there a drainage down on the one that Greg's got open there at the bottom of the long rectangular piece? No, farther down at the bottom of the screen, Greg, off the site. Is that any?
Oh, this yeah, right,
is that any
away.
Kind of?
That's actually a pile.
That's a pile.
Yeah,
okay.
That's one of Tri-City's either concrete recycling piles or
not
one
a pond.
Of the buildings
okay.
piles.
I believe isn't this Brent where the one is for the
yep,
utility equipment in there? Yeah, that water stagnates. It doesn't do
that's
much.
That's their detention basin. There's some drainage issues just to the right of the red boundary and south of the mobile home park, I believe it's down there, or there's just a few small residents down there. That's where that pipe that we have running through their outlets, and there's some drainage issues there. So we've got and Manats has been willing to kind of spearhead this and talk with some of their neighbors to try to get everybody come to the table and see if we can help out.
Benefits everybody, it sounds like.
Yep, good. That's what we're hoping.
Good, good. Great.
Greg, if you could also go back to the landscape plan, please. Just to update you on that, the Board of Adjustment did grant a variance for them to place the concrete screening barrier right where that is. It's the solid line inside of the highlighted area, and then it will be surrounded by landscaping. It's going to be 10 foot tall, and I know that's going to seem, wow, we're going to have something 10 foot tall right up against the very close proximity to the front property line. However, it'll actually provide screening that was never there before. I don't know if any of you drove by when the operations were happening. You're watching it. It's right in front of your face, yep. All the operations. Their hope was to lessen the impact on traffic that's traveling on State Street. Board of Adjustment agreed, thought it was a much better screening issue than we ever had before. The outside of that concrete wall is going to have a decorative fashion to it, as much as you can make a concrete wall decorative, it'll have a feature to it.
You're in a neighborhood full of industrial, and it's an heavy industrial use, and to the extent you can make it look better, thank you.
Yeah. And to some degree, it'll serve as a sound barrier, too.
Good, good. All right, thanks. Any other comments from staff on that, then?
No, sir.
Okay, thanks. Anyone in the commission have questions on this matter?
I have a few, Mr. Chairman.
Yep.
Let's talk about the material storage. How tall or how high will that material storage be?
I believe the wall we spoke about would be about 10 to 12 feet high.
But how about the material inside of those walls? Will they be less than 10 feet?
Maybe a little higher, a couple feet higher than that, but would be set back further. We do not want it to overflow, that's for sure.
Okay. But it's not going to be anything 20 or 30 feet high?
No.
Okay. So it'll be pretty much behind the wall?
Yes.
Okay. The other question I have is, how tall is the building, the new building you're putting in? It looks extremely tall.
Offhand, I couldn't tell you.
I think it's about 60 feet.
Good question.
Yeah, if that was a 16-foot truck door,
yeah,
14-foot for perspective.
Yeah, it's pretty good size. But basically, it was kind of what you had saw there before where they had a concrete plant outside. Basically, the concrete plant will be housed inside so that you won't see that. So it's probably, I don't recall, 50. I don't remember if it's 47, 50 feet, somewhere in that ballpark. But basically, it'd be very similar to what you saw before, except you won't see it because it's just housed within a building.
Okay. So it's not any taller than what was
there? Not any taller than was there before.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's actually going to be lower because it's going to sit further down the site in the lower area.
Yeah. And it'd also be sitting quite a ways further back from where it used to be. It used to be a lot closer out towards State Street, and this will be set back.
Could you bring that information when you come to the city council so you can give a definitive answer? Because
sure. Yeah, we do have that information. I can check to see in here if I do have it.
I've seen one of these already out, and they're pretty tall. And I don't know. I think that's something that we should have in front of us before it gets approved so we understand what this is going to look like down there.
I may have it here, okay. If I find it. Okay. But as you can see, before it was basically at the you see the first wall along the road that was approved from the variance. So then you have the next set of walls just to the south of there. That was about where the concrete plant used to sit, even just a little bit further towards State Street. And then you can see where the proposed building is set further back than that, which should provide some benefit to that.
We've just recently had an issue with tall buildings and near roads, so... trying to make sure we're aware.
Well, and just for perspective, Paul, guesstimating the top, it shows it's 80 feet wide. So if that's all to scale, I'd say you're in the 65, 70 feet
Yeah, that's
height. So
I was looking at it, and I thought it was going to be in the 70-foot
range. I'm coming up 70 feet because I'm taking a 14-foot door, and I'm just hand-sketching it off. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, that's 70. I'd say you're in the 70-foot range.
That's kind of what I thought. So, yeah. You know, granted, this is going to look better than having it sit out there the way it was, but I still think it's something that we should be aware of and think about before the city finally gives us approval. It's 7 stories, and there's nothing else near it that's 7 stories. So,
I think we're going to have a discussion about that because there are height limits in that zoning district. So,
okay.
We probably should have a discussion on that before this goes before City Council.
Sure.
Okay.
No, thanks.
Paul, that was a good thing to bring
up. That's all
in.
I have.
So, John, as far as height limits go, would they be different for a building versus equipment? I guess that's what you'd call what was there before.
There's some things we consider structures, and then
right.
There's some things we consider ancillary to structures. Yeah, it gets a little dicey when you're talking about a concrete manufacturing facility. But what he's showing, what Greg is displaying right now, is clearly a structure.
Mm-hmm.
That does have height limits, and we're going to have to discuss that before this goes forward to City Council.
Well, there are bins, the old bins that were outside.
Yeah.
Well, if they're the same height, you got to get a roof over top of them. So you're going to be, significantly higher than the silo.
Yeah.
But I can see there's a differentiation between.
But this isn't a piece of equipment.
Equipment and a building.
But this isn't a piece of equipment.
Right. It's not.
This clearly falls under the structure height restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Thanks, Paul. Anyone else from the commission with questions or comments?
Yeah, I'm curious. There's no sidewalk, right, on that side?
There is.
There is?
Yes.
There is.
Okay, and I know this has gone through the Board of Adjustments already, but and since I haven't seen that or don't know what exactly was discussed, was there consideration on trucks pulling up far enough to be able to see traffic both ways without being on the sidewalk and to see around that 10-foot?
The line of sight there?
Yeah.
Yeah, that should not be an issue with the existing driveway locations.
So the 10-foot high concrete variance that was given that they'll be able to pull up without being on the
sidewalk?
They'll
easily have that 35-foot vision triangle.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks, Scott.
Good point to bring up.
Anything in particular special about the proposed washing station? That's the concrete truck washout. Anything particular relative to that? That
I would just say it's going to be an upgrade to.
Yeah, I don't think we had one before, so we're glad to see it this time.
It's going to be an upgrade. They have an upgraded water reuse system that's required by the state.
Great.
So the facilities themselves will be a huge upgrade.
A lot of big wins then too. Good. Okay. All right, anyone else with the commission? Further questions? Anyone in the audience with regard to this other than what we've heard? I'll come back to the commission and a question just procedurally. We could go ahead and, if we're so inclined, approve this subject to clarification on the height issues.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I would ask that you do so.
Yep. Okay, so back to the commission then.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve case number 19-029, subject to staff recommendations, and also subject that the staff double checks to make sure that the building doesn't exceed the limits necessary.
Second.
Okay, great. Thank you. We have a motion and a second to approve case 19-029, site development plan for 3923 State Street. Subject to staff recommendations and the further clarification on the compliance with height requirements. All those in favor say aye.
Mr. Chairman, just a quick question here. Is there one of the things I'm concerned about is if you look behind this building, you'll see a mountain of recycled materials.
It's right there right now, yeah.
And I don't want to see that happening right here on the edge of the road. So is there any way that we can put some wording in our approval that this height of this material doesn't exceed either a certain height or a certain distance above the walls, or?
Are you talking about all the material on the property or just that
the
at
stuff
the front?
The stuff that's in the front here that would be visible, you know, the idea of the wall, and I applaud the wall, I think it's a great idea. I'm just thinking that 5 years down from here, you know, they start adding more and more, they get busy, whatever, or they don't get busy, I don't know the business, but they have a lot of material stored, and all of a sudden now you've got it 20 foot high, and that wall becomes, it doesn't do the screening that we're asking it to.
Is the mountain that, I know what you're talking about, the mountain, is that the one that's back here below this?
Yeah.
Not that's back.
That's
is
right
that
there.
Part of this operation, or that's part
no,
of the
that's
neighbors?
That's on Tri-Cities.
Tri-City.
Yeah, that's the asphalt, right?
Yeah. Yes. Jason, yeah. You might be able to answer this, but my thought is, Paul, is from a practical perspective, you know, that wall is freestanding, essentially, because it's not a true retaining wall. It doesn't have soil on either side supporting it. So they're not really going to be able to put too much weight up against the wall. And then, Greg, if you go to the site plan, you know, they have their main drive aisle to get their trucks runs between the two sets of bins.
Okay.
So they can't cover that. That's their access to their truck parking to the west. So I think from a practical nature, they would never be able to really exceed much that could fit within those bins from a height perspective. By the area that's allowed there.
Okay, well then I'm fine with that.
We also have stockpile access on the right of that green line too. That wall is going to hold material as well. So that material on both sides.
Okay.
Limited.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Nope. Good
more
thought.
Short term.
Good question.
Yeah. Good. And just in general, it looks like there's a lot of things that are improving as part of what's proposed. So we'll keep working to make it happen. Good. All right. So we were at. We had a motion. We're a vote now. All those in favor of approving case 19-029, site development plan for 3923 State Street, subject to staff recommendations and the further confirmation that the height is compliant. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. 19-029, subject to recommendations and modification, is approved. Okay. And that would take us to Jeff.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. Again, my name is Jeff Ryder, Economic Development Director for the City of Bettendorf. And tonight, Councilor Kern and I will walk you through something that's probably a little more unique and something you're not used to reviewing on a daily basis, but something that's very, very exciting. We're going to talk to you tonight about the creation of a self-supporting municipal improvement district. And I'm going to do my best to make a long story short, but this will probably need some explanation as to what's occurring, and hopefully we do it justice. Ryan Jancy is the manager of the Downtown Bettendorf organization. He could not be with us this evening, but in his place are a number of folks in the back aisle of the church pew.
That's what they're here for. Okay.
Representing the Downtown Organization Steering Committee. They're all business and property owners in the downtown district, and if it's appropriate or necessary tonight, they'll be happy to answer any questions for you. So what I'd like to do as part of this case is just walk you through the documents in the packet and hopefully clarify everything that's occurring and answer any questions you may have. And then Chris will talk about the legislative process that's necessary and why P&Z has been engaged this evening. So what's a self-supporting municipal improvement district, or a SMID as it's called for short? So a SMID is something that you see in another parts of the Quad Cities. The Downtown Davenport Partnership and a couple of other entities in the Quad Cities have them. They are common across the state of Iowa and actually in other forms in other states in the union as well. But a SMID is a self-imposed levy upon commercial and industrial property values within the district. The use of the collected funds is restricted to the betterment of the businesses and cultural environment of the downtown district. And the documents in the packet will outline what we're talking about a little bit. But basically what this is a voluntary tax that the property and business owners in this district are requesting be imposed so they can better the region that's in question. It's not always easy, and this has been, as the letter states, from Mr. Plain, and then also from Mr. Jancy. It's been about an 18-month period of time that this has been going on. But the folks in the back of the room, the steering committee, they've been doing a lot of legwork and putting a lot of sweat equity to really work with the downtown property owners and businesses to explain to them what may be occurring and how this is beneficial and why a SMID would really, really be a cool thing in downtown Bettendorf at this time in its history. So there's a lot of benefits to establishing a SMID, but once again, I think it's important to talk about a couple of things up front. I'm not coming to you tonight as a city representing suggesting that the city impose a tax on the property and the business owners. This is a voluntary tax that's being requested by the property owners and imposed on their properties. That's pretty cool. What does it mean? It means that there's a tremendous amount of buy-in, and it is also something that is a collaborative effort. So the city of Bettendorf and our city council has established this as a goal to see a downtown SMID created. With that, to help springboard this, the city council passed a resolution of endorsement to support this. I believe it was back in October, and that's in your packet. The goal with that was to show our commitment to supporting this. So before this got going and this petition was out on the streets for people to look at and sign, the city of Bettendorf contributed financially to this for a five-year period, and also the Isle has contributed to this as well. Those two entities really kind of set the tone to say, look, we're major players in this, and we understand that this district does require some support from the municipality and the largest taxpayer in the district, and we're willing to do that. That was used to help leverage the efforts and help show that there is commitment and that the city would not be walking away and turning a blind eye to this if this was established. So what does that look like for the DBO, the Downtown Bettendorf Organization? They're currently projecting about a $375,000 operating budget for this organization as it gets started. And they can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that's the number. Right out of the gates, as in many communities, you see the municipalities contributing to help support this. So as you saw in Mr. Plain's letter in the packet, the city and the Isle will contribute a total of $150,000 annually during the term of this to help support that effort. So net number is going to be roughly about $225,000 that they're going to want to capture through the tax. You might ask, why is the Isle carved out? Okay, so they're downtown, they're a big taxpayer, why don't they pay full freight, if you will? That was a mutually agreed upon decision. Obviously, with their assessed value, that's a very large number. The suggestion is a 275 levy. So if you put a 275 levy on something that's, I don't know what their assessment is, but let's say it's $50 million. It's a very large amount of money. The Isle may have had an issue with that. I would assume they would, paying at that level. But the downtown organization that's establishing the SMID also had a head-scratching moment on that too. Do we really want to manage that much money? The goal is to get this going, to establish this for a five-year term and start this thing, to springboard it, to launch it, and really get these efforts moving. And to be responsible fiscally for that amount of money, it could be a challenge for one person and one small organization as they're getting going. Because part of this obligation as well is that every year they have to come back and report to council how they allocated the resources. And to have a seven-figure number, potentially an eight-figure number, just from one entity or collected, if you will, it could be somewhat of a challenge to disperse all those dollars. So it was mutually agreed upon that this is a fair and equitable amount to get it going, when they knew ultimately that their goal is only to have somewhere around a $350,000 to $400,000 operating budget. If this gets off the ground in 4 or 5 years and it's really going, most likely they'll renew, and they may ask for either a decreased levy because the property values in downtown are going up, there's more great projects going on, so the levy may go down, but the dollars may go up. It's just one of those things we'll see in the next few years. But that's kind of the scenario there. We feel it very important. The city has committed to it. The Isle has committed to it, and part of the process will be once this gets through the approval by City Council, they will be required to establish themselves formally as an organization and have a governing board. At that time, the city would have an ex officio seat on that board, as would the Isle, and then the property owners govern themselves. So the types of things that you may see as benefits to a SMID, obviously they want to create a strategic plan to start this and create the downtown growth we'd like to see happen. They'll establish a website and a social media presence. They really want to be out there and have a brand and let the community know that this is a good thing happening in downtown Bettendorf. A number of committees will work, and those committees will have a number of tasks. Some of them might be working hand in hand with staff on things like streetscapes, beautification, making sure that we are down there enacting our code and making sure that if there are violations or things that are not for the benefit of downtown, we're doing our part as the civic body to uphold certain standards. Obviously, beautification efforts. I mentioned the Downtown Davenport Partnership. If you drive the streets of downtown, you see the pots hanging from all their light poles. They're cool, they're beautiful, they're every year. That's not a function of the city of Davenport. That's actually something done by the Downtown Davenport Partnership. They put them in place, they maintain them, they plant them, they take them down every year. So a beautification effort like that was something you may see in downtown Bettendorf. They will have dedicated staff, and I can tell you right now, a lot of the efforts when I started this role were trying to help do some things downtown. Ryan and the DBO have taken it to a whole other level. So some days I get three or four calls from Ryan suggesting there's things I need to get my butt on and do. So the dedicated staff working on behalf of the downtown property owners, it's already shown some results, and it's really proven positive. And I could give you a number of examples, but having dedicated staff repping them is a very, very critical component of this. And then events. Dedicated economic development type of events are crucial to a downtown area. And again, I'll reference the Downtown Davenport Partnership. I'm sure you're all familiar with Alternating Currents, which is the annual music festival in downtown. That's actually put on by the Downtown Davenport Partnership. So these cool things that are happening in our city next door, those are things that are because of a SMID district that's in place. The facade and interior grants component that you saw in the packet as well is a huge thing. The city of Bettendorf, every year we place some dollars into a facade fund and we review facade improvement opportunities and we help. But it is limited. We have budgetary constraints, et cetera. And currently it's limited to exterior improvements. What the SMID would like to do, this downtown organization, is elevate the level of funding available and also take it a step further and enhance interiors if possible. And it can also take it a step further and maybe help support architectural or engineering or environmental type of issues as well. Those are things we don't typically look at right now. It's kind of a private sector thing. This is where the private sector is coming and saying this SMID is something that could really help that. So as you see in there further on, there's a work plan that Ryan has put in place. And this outlines a lot of the necessary work that he sees taking place in the first year and beyond. And a number of these things have already come into play and been started. So they have a very, very well-calculated plan. They have established a nice budget to get them going. And again, this is certainly something that at this point in the history of downtown Bettendorf could really be a breath of fresh air. Again, I want to emphasize a couple of things. The letter you see on the screen, this is the letter from Ryan requesting the support from the City Council and the P&Z. The approval of this is necessary. So from a process perspective, in order for a SMID to be established, and Chris will elaborate on this in just a minute as well, it requires 25% of the commercial property owners to sign off on it, and it requires 25% of the value represented in that district to sign off on it as well. So I think it's very, very cool, and it says a lot about where the downtown property and business owners are right now to know that Mr. Jancy and the steering committee behind me has already secured a petition that has no less than 46% of the property owner signing off on it and no less than 59% of the value represented. By the time this gets to City Council, Ryan's confident that it's going to be over 50% on the property ownership and over 60% on the value. So that in mind, knowing that you only need 25 and 25, they have far exceeded the requirement. And that's deliberate and intentional, too, because they really want to make this an easy process for the P&Z and for the council ultimately to vote on this. If it was a contentious issue, it would be a lot more difficult. But as you can see by these numbers, it's a very, very high percentage, and it's something that's really moving in the right direction with some pretty good steam behind it. And you might ask, well, it's still only 50% and 60%. What about the other 50% of those folks? A number of the folks that Mr. Jancy and the committee have reached out to, a number of them are out-of-town property owners, folks that might be a holding company or a brokerage that just chose not to respond. So they were sent certified letters, they were sent the packet, but it may not be the fact that they don't support it. It might just be that they're just not responding. So the number might be truer and more greater if that was taken into consideration as well. It's my understanding today that there's only been three property owners representing four properties that have chosen not to sign the petition. So when you take that into account versus the number of folks that are willing to sign it, that's a pretty substantial show of support. And Ryan and I have had some nice conversations about some of those meetings as well. I'm going to close really quick after I want to turn over to Chris first, and then I'm just going to close with a couple of thoughts and identify the folks in the room and the work they've done. But Chris, if you could talk a little bit about the legislative and the statutory process we need to go through.
Sure. Thank you, Jeff. It is an interesting procedural process to get a SMID approved. And I think it's partly because we are receiving this petition from the taxpayers upon whom this tax would be imposed. So the process is this, and I'll just summarize it, and if there are any questions, let me know. But once we receive the petition with at least 25% of the property owners and value, then that petition is received, and we come to the Planning and Zoning Commission as we are tonight. The P&Z Commission will take some action tonight, either approving or not approving this case, relating on the merit and the feasibility of the petition and of the SMID. Once P&Z acts, that report will be given to council, just like any other recommendation on a rezoning matter or some other action that the commission takes. There are some different timing mechanisms, and I think it's just because of the, it's an important decision. So once the report goes to council will set a public hearing. And in addition to the publication of that notice, certified letters will go to each property owner in the district, by certified mail. And then we need 15 days before that public hearing can take place. So it's, you know, there's obviously 2 weeks between council meetings, so it's a little bit longer period of time for that public hearing to take place. Once the public hearing takes place, we need 30 days before the ordinance can be adopted. It needs three readings, so there's a little bit of additional time in there. And interestingly, and importantly, in order to adopt the SMID, we need 3/4 of City Council to approve it. If we get a counter petition from property owners in the proposed district comprising 25% of the owners and value, just like you need to make the petition in the first place, if you get this counter petition, then you need a unanimous vote at City Council. And if you get 40%, a counter petition of 40%, then the petition is withdrawn. So it's a very interesting procedural matter here. And so, but certainly the first step after we receive the petition with the appropriate number of signatures is to come to the commission tonight.
Thanks, Chris. So I just want to close really quick, and then I'll turn it over to anyone in the audience who may want to speak or not. That's fine as well. But as you see in the attachments, and by the high percentage of signatures that is contemplated in the petition, there is great support for this. To date, significant support has been shown by the individuals that we have here in the audience this evening. Mr. Kellner and Bill DeSuit have offered a significant amount of sweat equity and some financial assistance here in the interim time as this has been getting established. It's been nearly 2 years. because as you're asking people to contribute to a voluntary tax, you would expect it taking some time. So Mr. Kellner has been a very good advocate for that. As you see in the attachments, Pat Eikenberry and IMEG have drafted a legal description and formal boundaries. Mr. Owen and Accentra will offer Class A office space to the downtown Bettendorf organization in their new facility that's being constructed right now. All of this is being done pro bono. So there's an operational budget that's being created, but there's a lot of pro bono support that is being committed to this out of the civic pride and goodness of these organizations' hearts. It's just awesome. You see Mr. Bowie in the back of the room representing Bowie Machine. I've known Simon for some time. And Bowie Machine, you might ask yourself as an industrial partner, you know, what's there to gain? But, you know, Bowie's a longtime downtown business, and he has a high level of civic pride. And he's shown great advocacy, which is incredibly commendable. Michelle Blanc, Miss Blanc in the back of the room, has taken State Street Interiors, bought it from Marie Johnson. I think many of you know who Marie is. And she's brought new life to it, and she wants to continue to invest in that business and her other business endeavors, Interiors by the Sewing Room and a couple others, and keep those businesses in downtown Bettendorf. So she serves on the committee as well and has offered a breath of fresh air. You all know Mr. Keller and K&K. Don's continued to show support, allocated resources, staff, and senior leadership. representing a business that's now 77 years old in downtown Bettendorf. So you see a great cross-section of business types, business sizes, and just business investment that is here tonight on behalf of this organization. Also through the Bettendorf Development Corporation, their chairman right now is Joe Judge, attorney with Lane and Waterman. They've provided free legal service with the support of the Bettendorf Development Corp to get this going. So a lot of the paperwork and the documentation that you've seen as part of this, the drafting of the petition, et cetera, it's been worked on by Lane and Waterman at no cost. And then you'll see Mr. Rumler, Paul Rumler, here tonight with the Quad City Chamber, a true champion for the cause. You know, Paul and their operation at the chamber is going to provide the HR and administrative support to the downtown Bettendorf organization, provide an employee with insurance, the benefits, the necessary administrative support they need. It's not there. There's nothing there today. So to have an entity like the chamber come behind this and support it like they do the Downtown Davenport Partnership and provide that human resource and administrative arm and the support necessary, it's been there since day one, and the amount of support they've shown has been fantastic, but they're willing to shepherd this through and be that organization that helps keep this going and provide that employment that's necessary. So we can't thank Paul enough for all of their efforts as well at the chamber. let's see. You know, the one thing too, I'm not overselling this because it's truly not my thing, but you know, it's the property and business owners are communicating and working together more collaboratively than I think I can ever remember. And I grew up on 17th Street in Alcoa House. I think I've told you that before. So I've been downtown for 40 something years, dating myself. I don't recall a time whenever folks communicate collaboratively. I do get a lot of calls, or I have in the past, from business owners complaining about each other in downtown, but that has really started to shift. And there's been a lot of big brother and a lot of good stewardship amongst each other to really work together. And if there's times in which big brother needs to tell little brother, you know what, you're going to get a slap on the hand, there's a lot of that going on right now. And everyone's really working together, and it's been really, really refreshing. So I think I just want to close really quick by saying, you know, with this bridge construction and the new projects we have going on downtown, it's a pretty defining moment. And to have something like this where there's a voluntary tax that they're willing to impose on themselves can only mean good things. And I'm going to close really quick with just requesting your approval of case 19031 and offer the opportunity to any of the folks in the room to speak or to be available for any questions you may have. Thank you.
Great. Nice presentation. Thank you, Jeff. Questions from the commission?
I have a question.
Yeah.
So you've indicated that this is voluntary, but so what if I'm one of the business owners that's in the district and I don't want it and I don't sign the petition? Am I subject to the tax if it gets approved?
Yes.
And so I have no choice but to pay it?
Correct.
What's the mechanism if I don't pay it? What do you do to me if I don't pay it, if I just refuse and say I'm not going to pay it?
I would assume it would probably be assessed against your property.
Okay, I mean, I'm assuming that's going to be in the document. That's somehow in one of the in the organizational documents, Chris.
That's somehow. Right. This is like any other tax.
Yeah, it's okay. Their tax house.
And this will go on their bill, and
it's an assessment.
If they don't pay it, we'll take appropriate action.
Okay.
So yep. And there is an appeal process. I mean, if somebody, you know, there's a lot of procedural ways for people to, you know, if they want to get other people that, you know, to sign the 25 or the 40% as a counter petition, they can do that. But it is imposed on even those who are not in agreement.
And so this is put into place initially for 5 years?
That's right.
Correct.
And does it automatically renew for an additional
no.
5 years?
We need to come back and go through this process.
Okay.
Correct.
And what happens in the scenario that, you know, it gets going and then 3 years into it, it just fails and all these things that they've... Sorry, it's an occupational hazard. And we're left with, you know, electric signs that they're talking about at the gateway that nobody's funding and nobody's operating. And I mean, I guess that just falls back on the city to clean all that up then.
If it's on city property, yes, a lot of that would. So much of what they're talking about, like those gateway signs, it is public property where those are located. So, you know, I can't say 100%, but my assumption would be that they would purchase, invest in those, and maintain those, but as they would also be then turned over to the city in an ownership scenario.
Yeah, and I think one other thing, the dissolution process is similar to the process in which it's created. So if there is a petition down the road of 25% saying that they want to dissolve it, you know, that process is in the statute.
Okay.
So there's a lot of I think it's in keeping with the fact that this is a voluntary tax, and there could be a voluntary desire to dissolve. That's in 386.5. There's a dissolution process that has that process. And what I've seen in other cities, I haven't seen that happen. I think these things typically are quite successful, but the Iowa law does contemplate a mechanism for that to happen.
Okay.
Commissioner Byrd, I'll just add a little bit of insight from Ryan, kind of along the line of your first question there. So I actually had an opportunity to speak with a property owner down here too, prior to him getting the chance to meet with Ryan. He called the city trying to get some more information from a third-party perspective about what's going on. And he asked me that question, you know, what happens if I don't sign? Am I still paying this tax? Yes, you are. So what happens then is, his question was, you know, is that really fair to a, he goes, I can afford it, but what if a business owner doesn't really see the value in it? I explained what he was going to hear from Ryan and his presentation to him, and I also said that there's a number of property owners in the downtown district that will not see as great of a benefit, you know, on their storefront or through business development, if you will, from this. But there are also taxpayers that are paying into this with a lot of resources in a lot of cases that are doing it to help leverage their dollars with others to help businesses that may not get as much bang for their buck. So there's a $100,000 building. Their amount they're paying is very nominal. It's about $275 a year. But if you leverage your $275 again with someone who's a multi-million dollar operation, there's greater good, and the rising tide lifts all boats. That was enough to give him peace of mind, and Ryan has had the similar conversation with a couple others. And two of the property owners I mentioned who just said they're not going to sign it, one of them kicked Ryan out and said, get off my property, made a call to someone who thought was, and I'm just going to leave these folks anonymous, made a call to someone who thought was a friend, an ally, who he was, but also serves on the steering committee who's working on it, who gave him a little bit more information on what's going on, quickly called Ryan back and apologized. He said, you know what, I'm not going to sign the petition, but I'm certainly not going to get in the way. I now understand it more. So even if there's signatures that are not appearing, a lot of those folks at least now have an understanding. And as Chris said, we have to issue a certified letter. Ryan will have met with every single business and property owner in the district. No one can come back later and say, I didn't know anything about this. Everyone will have heard. So by and large, if they're not signing, there will always be holdouts. I'm not going to paint the rosy picture, but there's a lot of folks that just said, I get it, I see it's happening, I'm not going to get in the way, I understand it, and residually I will get a benefit out of this, even though I don't necessarily like it.
Chris, I have a question procedurally. Yeah. If someone does want to start the petition to dispute this, from a timing perspective, are they still able to do that, or is it too late, or when does it become too late?
They need to do it before it's adopted, so before the third reading of the ordinance.
Okay.
And once it's adopted and it's in the city code, then the only way for it to be dissolved would be to have the opposite process, and it would then need to go to council if there is a petition seeking dissolution.
Right.
Then it would have to go to council. You would need 3/4 to dissolve.
Okay.
Or unanimous if you get 40% of the people saying no, we want it. So it sort of just flips.
Mm-hmm.
Inverse, in a sense.
Okay.
But at this point in the process, if there is some form of dissent out there, the opportunity is still open.
Yes,
that's
it is.
Right. And that's
opinion to be expressed.
And that's why
these timing periods,
the 30 days between the public hearing and adoption,
right.
And the 15 days before the public hearing. After that, you know, at least 15 days notice, it's just stretched out, mm-hmm. and there's time for that to take place if that sentiment is there.
Sure.
I should have read the code, but the city's kind of the gorilla in the room, and they're they're a stakeholder on the board, I heard. Is that right?
We'll have an ex officio seat, so we'll be advisory to a governing board.
So,
but they won't be able to vote.
Correct.
Okay, so they don't have a mechanism in the code that they can decide that, this wasn't a good idea and we're just going to terminate it. They can't come in and play some sort of trump card, for lack of a better word, can they?
The city?
Yeah.
No, once this is established. This is going to be a separate 501c3 entity. We'll file, and we will have, there will be a board of directors. The city will have, this ex officio role, but our action is in adopting this ordinance, creating the SMID, and then the SMID will be run by a separate entity with a separate board of directors.
Okay.
Are they subject to an audit?
Yeah, so every year they have to provide their financials, and they have to give a report to the city council justifying all their expenditures. So that is something that they're going to have to provide every year as part of their annual reporting.
What's the mechanism for deciding on a disbursement? Who actually makes that decision?
Who gets?
A request comes in. Who is it, a board that makes that
so
decision?
That'll be up to their downtown organization board when that's established. So
the board will periodically review requests for funds.
However they set up that operational structure, if they do establish a facade program, hypothetically, they would review that and disperse as they saw fit.
And regarding the SMIDs going, I called it interior, inside a building, are there other SMIDs that do that as well? Is this unique to Bettendorf, or there's others that go interior as well?
No, there's others, and actually I believe Kyle Carter and the Downtown Davenport Partnership have a similar sort of program, if you will, in their SMID. So it's not unique. I think a lot of SMIDs offer that sort of service. Yeah.
Cool. How long has that SMID been in place in Davenport, Jeff?
Oh, Paul, can you help me with that?
40?
Whoa.
Okay.
We're behind the curve a little.
And is it like the SSAs that are in Moline?
It's the same thing, yeah.
Yeah, because I'm on the SSA board in Moline, SSA 5. For the property owners that we represent in Moline. And I can tell you that really I believe that the success of a downtown, it really takes a Schmid, an SSA because you have the buy-in of all the owners. They control the money and where the money is spent, and they have a say in it too. So if this does go through in the timeline, would this be on the 2020 assessment, which would get paid in the September 2021 installment?
Actually, September of 2020. So it would be part of our approved budget that comes about in March. So we're trying to get this March of 20.
You're trying to get ahead of
correct.
Budget
so
prep for next year.
That's correct. So they would see dollars back to the organization in September of 20. So part of that interim or that gap, if you will, has been a commitment by the city as well to provide interim funding.
Okay.
And we're going to do that to continue the process. To date, I've mentioned this has been going on for about 2 years. The Bettendorf Development Corporation and the city each contributed $30,000 annually to support Mr. Jancy and his efforts. So for the last 2 years, he's been operating on a very lean budget of $60,000 a year. And again, I can't say enough about what the Chamber is doing, because I know there's a lot of in-kind that they've provided as well to get this going. So that 60 would be taken up in the interim year to 75,000. And then as the dollars start coming in, the city and the Isles contribution go to 150 total, but their total budget is hopefully to be somewhere around that 375 window. So,
anyone else from the commission? Okay, the last church row back there, and anybody in front of that. Any comments from you other than what Jeff has added? We'd love to hear from you. I'm just glad to meet somebody who's willing to raise taxes on themselves and vote for it. You guys are a very special group of folks, let me tell you. So
I feel like instead of making a motion for approval, we should be giving you all a standing ovation for what you're doing.
Oh, I think it's great.
It I do, too.
Our downtown.
Yeah.
And dust off the snacks.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move we approve.
Okay.
Case 19-031.
We have a motion.
I'll second that.
And we have a second. And I guess just a little extra discussion. I too am excited about what you guys are proposing, the concept of raising tax on yourself. I mean, adjust a little bit, but it is self-serving in the end. And I think, Jeff, you noted we've got a tipping point here with the bridge. That's a monumental change to our downtown that we haven't had for a long, long time. And take advantage of that momentum and opportunity for change and dial it up. I'm thrilled to see it happen. So congratulations on the effort, and thank you for it. So
yeah, I'd like to second that, really. I remember last summer there was an event kind of going on in the downtown area, and I was telling some of my friends about it, and they're like, Bettendorf has a downtown, and because it's a more small area than some of our surrounding cities, and it was exciting to see something going on there, and like you said, it kind of being freshened up and new things happening. I think it's great for Bettendorf.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, when Mo's on your side, go for it.
Commissioner Ormsby, to that point, I'm overselling, but the city kind of kicked that off last year. The business owners got involved, and this year it's going to be on June 8th and 9th. And actually, the Quad City Arts Chalk Art Fest has been integrated as part of that as well. So it's growing, and the cool thing for the city is to see how the property owners came after this year and said, it went good, we want to make it great. I don't want to say this flippantly, but basically, city, get out of the way. We want to take this on and own it. So we appreciate your support and continue to offer your support to it, but we're happy to take the lead on this and make this part of this downtown organization. So again, getting the gorilla, in the backside and letting the business owners be in the forefront, it's been a pretty cool year.
Yeah, and actually even while I went to the event myself and was walking around kind of seeing what the different businesses had going on, I wandered into one that I hadn't been in before, and actually, for my company, created a new partnership with a business. So there was definitely benefit to you guys for that.
Great. All right, so we have a motion and a second to approve case 19031, the SMID proposal to be passed on to the City Council. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. 19031 is approved. And thank you again.
I just wanted to know what
Thanks,
all right.
Jeff.
Commission update.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At the April 2nd City Council meeting, the Council approved the preliminary plat of Cottage Grove Second Edition. They approved the site plan at 5181 Competition Drive up at the TBK Sports Complex. They approved the site plan at 4269 53rd Avenue. As you'll remember, that's going to be the veterinary clinic up in the Shops of the Woodlands. They approved the renaming of Slate Creek Drive so that it's divided to East and West Slate Creek Drive for addressing purposes and for clarification for emergency services. That's in the Village of the Woodlands. They approved the final plat at Glenbrook Ridge Second Edition. At the April 16th City Council meeting, they approved the rezoning of 4065 Forest Grove Drive from A1 to R2 Single Family Residential. And they reapproved a final plat of Huffman's Second Edition. That's Mr. Kellner's project up at the storage facilities on Devil's Glen Road. So you'll remember in 2017, he was going to add a strip of land and then one more building there. That is simply procedural. The platting documents didn't get filed in time, so they had to go through the reapproval process. And that brings you up to date on all the City Council actions based on your actions.
Wonderful. A lot going on and continues to be. So, again, thanks for the efforts on the part of the city staff. It's been a good session today, and I'm really excited about what we see coming for downtown. So, yeah.
Thank
They've all left. So, with that, we are adjourned.